Hey everyone, before this interview even began, I knew I was going to need to do a bumper intro. Out of respect for the phenomenal people who listen to this show, it only makes sense to introduce Macy Tomlin to you properly. She's a great friend of mine who's arrived at some controversy over the years, which also happens to anyone else who's been involved in the libertarian sphere for, say, longer than a year and is known by more than, say, three people. So rather than talking to her about her relationships with specific people, I decided to talk to her about her relationship with a plant. As you can imagine, in any conversation regarding psychedelics, we delve deep into emotional imagery. And as a result, I'm a bit more loose in my terms such as soul, and I don't mind when people use terms like energy as much. To be quite honest, this is a conversation and is not within an academic setting. What you'll hear from me is not a person who's trying to destroy the beliefs of another, as I would in a formal debate, right? But rather attempt, just as I do with many other religious adherents who've been on this very show, to find the best aspects of a person's viewpoint while discarding that which I find unnecessary, and I leave it to you to take in this information, use your own forms of critical thinking, and then figure out what's true for you. It is important to not be so open-minded that our brains fall out, of course, but also be willing to dig deep inside ourselves and others to become the hero in our own life story, right? My story continues to move forward rather than backwards, and plant medicine, as Macy describes it, that, and as we'll be discussing on the show today, has helped my story become better and more complex. So on that note, let's start the show. Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales, and this is the Think About Now podcast, recording from my living room in San Diego, California. Presently, I am sitting right by an amazing human being, Macy Tomlin. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing very well. If you do me a favor, go ahead and make sure the mic is up close to your mouth. Exactly, because we're trying to keep away as much echo as possible. Perfect. All righty. I'm glad to have you here. What I would like to talk to you a little bit about is, you know, your kind of experiences when it comes to, you know, on this show, I've discussed the use of psychedelic mushrooms as well as the use of MDMA to overcome things like post-traumatic stress disorder and kind of the benefits of that. And you have been quite a proponent of using something known as ayahuasca, which I believe the sacred molecule tied to that is dimethyltryptamine, correct?
Correct.
Very cool. So when did you kind of get introduced to, say, using psychedelic healing medicines in order to be able to better extract what is consciousness?
Good question. So I started my psychedelic therapy back in 2010. I was a Hooters girl, very materialistic. I can't say woman. I'm going to say girl. And I didn't really understand much about life at this point. I also thought that the government was our friend, that it was there to protect and serve the people. And I got my hands on 2/8 of mushrooms and took them all and was in a very, very unfamiliar place. It was a really, really bad experience. But it was almost as if those mushrooms were a mirror to who I really was. And at that point, it was dark and gray, and I don't know what made me try mushrooms again or any kind of psychedelics, but I did start to microdose with them about 3 months later. And I started to realize in that time that the government was lying to us. So mushrooms and psychedelics in general were a huge step for me to learn that authority is not something that I wanted in my life, that I could govern myself. And I also had a lot of issues that I needed to work out that, you know, with psychedelics, I could face it and there was no place to run. There was no numbing with like the use of antidepressants. So I actually had to face my issues and then learn from them. And psychedelics became a very good friend of mine. And it wasn't until 2016 that I was introduced and sat with the medicine of ayahuasca. And so I was a huge proponent of MDMA therapy and LSD and psilocybin. But now my attention has turned more to plant medicine, plant-based medicine, things that you can find in nature. So mushrooms are included in that, but I am way more targeting ayahuasca now. And different Peruvian medicines. So I spend a lot of my time in the Peruvian Amazon rainforest, and I work a lot with the medicine of ayahuasca and other plants that the Shipibo tribe uses in that area.
Yeah. And so how much time have you actually spent in Peru?
This year alone, I've spent about 5 months in Peru. 3 of those months were spent in total isolation in a little shack in the middle of the jungle.
Like, as in, you didn't see anyone any day for?
No, I did. During ayahuasca ceremonies, there were 4 ayahuasca ceremonies a week, and I would go to those. But for the rest of the whole day, the only person that I really got to see was the person who would bring me my 2 fish and 2 plantains. And I mean, he just dropped them off and left. So I was alone, you know, I had to really face my, excuse my language, my shit during this time. So it was incredibly challenging because I am on the path of the medicine, the plant medicine. I want to make it more accessible to people in the United States and be that trustworthy source for holding ceremonies for others. And to do that, I have to go through quite a bit of hell in order to be able to hold ceremony for others.
You do end up having quite a bit more of an interesting version of med school, though.
Yes. And I mean, it really is. It's like studying to be a doctor. It's years and years of studying and learning how to straighten your mind and really control it. So a lot of meditation.
Yeah. So walk me through kind of what, say, an ayahuasca ceremony. And I understand that, you know, whenever we're talking about, say, things that we actually can't explain, well, you know, we're not going to be able to have words for those. But in the nature of, you know, words are a way by which we telepathically try to transmit a specific image into someone else's consciousness the best way that you possibly can. Give me a little rundown, maybe not even the you know, you're what, you're basically in Peru, you're, you know, a brunette white girl, you know, in the fucking jungle.
Yeah.
not a 5'2" Peruvian man.
No.
So just your overall complexion does not scream, you know, I'm one of this forest right now.
Correct. Yeah, I do not look the part. But the medicine has touched me so that I can't imagine my life without it. And it's definitely, I don't want to work with anything else. It's that powerful. So to give you a rundown, you cannot expect anything from ayahuasca. You don't know what you're going to get. And, you know, and I think it's very interesting for people who just see it as a chemical. But for people who actually take the medicine, they soon find out that there is another force. There are other worlds. In a sense, ayahuasca gives you a new perception to life. It shows you where you are not living life to the fullest and how you can fix it. It gives you a really, really deep look into your own subconscious mind. So for instance, I have a really hard time with drinking cold water, taking cold showers. And ayahuasca showed me a memory from my childhood of my father making me eat cold SpaghettiOs. And the medicine basically told me this is where it comes from. So, I mean, it can go that deep to understand like where your problems start. So a lot of the time, it's really, really good for people who have been sexually abused as children. People who have undergone a lot of trauma, because you have to face it. You have to face yourself. And in that time of you facing it, that's when you learn how to heal it and become aware of the problems. Because a lot of these times we don't understand our own mind. We don't understand how it works. So it helps to simplify our subconscious mind and why we behave, in certain ways.
Yeah, I stared into the eyes of chaos and it was just me naked as a boy. And so, yeah, it's that kind of that feeling. And so what I found really interesting talking to you about this is, you know, I've not done anything resembling DMT, right? I've done LSD, shrooms, and a few other things, but nothing on that end. But when you talk about, you know, these repressed memories, if you will, coming back up into the surface and being able to deal with them, where it's a matter of you go from being the victim to being the hero in the story. Right. Yeah. So you're switching it from the case of you being oppressed passenger to the dominant harmonizer of the situation. Yeah. And you do something similar actually in, and I think I've talked about this before on the show, EMDR, eye movement based therapy, where you're basically reliving those in a therapeutic sense. Somatic therapy is another one. And so what you're finding with a lot of these things is that rather than being concerned about constantly being triggered by the worst aspects of your trauma, instead becoming the conqueror of that trauma instead. And, you know, I can't say good enough things for people who are willing to take that risk and use that courage to get to those places. Because only through that struggle do you find the meaning. And without meaning and without purpose and without a sense of empowerment, you are watching life go by rather than taking part of it. So from what I've gathered, it allows you to truly be present outside of the narratives and stories that we tell ourselves. So if someone is, say, interested in doing something like ayahuasca, what I find interesting is, you know, again, you're a white American girl. You're living in the United States at the time, right? Or were you in Mexico already?
I just moved to Mexico.
Yeah. And you just jump online and go, oh, I want to do a 3-month long ceremony. How was it? You don't have to go through exact details, but it's just interesting to me. Like, how did you even get to, I'm going to go for 3 months?
I think, you know, my mother was a very spiritual individual when I was a child. And so we did a lot of, we would always talk about this other world that we could not see or hear. And, you know, but we just kind of knew it was there. And I was always curious about this other world. And so I think, you know, I'd always just been interested in the paranormal and things that I couldn't see with my physical eyes. And so psychedelics kind of gave me a peek. So I had my eye through a peephole almost. And in that, that's why I think I fell in love with psychedelics so much, because I feel like they freed me in so many ways that I was my own, I imprisoned myself in a lot of ways. And when I took ayahuasca, when I sat with the medicine of ayahuasca for the first time, ayahuasca is much different than any other psychedelic that I've ever sat with. It is a very, very deep journey that you go on. And the first time I sat with her was in Acapulco, Mexico at the conference Anarchapulco. And she showed me my true potential. And I do say she because, you know, 99% of the people who take ayahuasca will say that this plant does have a feminine energy, almost as if it is the spirit of Mother Earth. And I think that the spirit of Mother Earth is naturally just an anarchist. So she teaches you how to free yourself. And at that time when I took that and I was shown my true potential, instantly I knew that this is the medicine that I want to work with, that I'm supposed to be on a path of shamanism, that every trauma that I've ever gone through in my life, and I've had a lot of them, led me down this path. All this darkness, all this this trauma led me down this path of spirituality and of healing. And so I realized in that moment that I was my first patient. And that I needed to learn how to heal myself with all my problems, because it somewhat takes one to know one. And so these shamans have to heal themselves beforehand. And it was at that point that I wanted to become a shaman, but I didn't know how much work was going to be put into it. So I ended up leaving the relationship I was in because it was not how I was going to get to the place that I needed to be. And, you know, I ended up at rock bottom. I feel that I was put through another huge challenge of how much do you want this? How bad do you want this? And I remember making a pact with the medicine saying, I will do anything. I will do anything to work with you. I will, you know, I will, whatever else I have to put to the sideline, because this is my main focus. And 6 months later, I ended up in Peru. And how I found this is what's scary about ayahuasca. There is a dark side to it, because in Peru, you know, it is very popular now. And a lot of women go down there to explore the medicine and end up finding the wrong place and getting raped or hurt by the shamans. And this is the dark side of the medicine. I was very fortunate when I was looking up different retreats. My heart chose this one and said, this is the one. And so I go to Niue Rau retreat. It's near Iquitos, Peru. And I do tell people about this because I don't want people to go to a place that they could potentially be in danger. So that's where I found, and the four shamans that work there are just incredible. Ricardo is the main shaman, and he is so professional, and he will really take care of you. And so I went for a month, and the medicine still stuck with me very strongly. I think, you know, I was thinking about what I was learning in that time. I had to face a lot of my traumas. And after that point, I decided to go back for 3 months. And I will be going back for a full year. So the medicine just continues to help me. I've worked out a lot of my abandonment issues. My father left as a when I was a child, like right after a lawnmower accident. So the trauma on top of a trauma of abandonment has really affected me. And so I'm working with my abandonment issues. And I see that I will be able to help women who have the same kind of issues later in life. So this is for me, but it's also for other people. And it's really opened my heart, the medicine. So I really have gained a very deep understanding and a deep love of other people because of that, and a really, really deep connection with others. And I think it's what we call Sonder, where we see that people's lives are as complex as ours. And so I would love to help other people reach into their subconscious mind and understand themselves a lot better.
Cool.
I'm sorry, that was really long.
No, not at all. Just to give me, we're going to take just a 1 second break here. Okay, so that was your experience with ayahuasca, but what are your views, though, on, say, synthetically derived DMT?
I used to make it, actually. You know, I think that if you put a lot of love into it, it's good. But in the Shipibo tribe where I trained to be a shaman, other synthetic drugs like MDMA or DMT and things like that, they say that they have a lot of energies. And I do believe it's true. I spent a lot of time in a spiritual sense. They call it cleaning the energies of LSD, which I feel was a big mistake of mine to take as much LSD as I did. So I'm kind of on the fence about synthetic drugs at this point. I really just like natural drugs, but I mean, I think that everybody should be able to put whatever they want in their bodies. Honestly, I think that's the whole point of anarchy and freedom. I just don't promote them as much as I used to.
Well, I think that the benefit, at least, of synthetics is the concern with running out of the plant, right? If everyone attempted to do something like ayahuasca right now, obviously we would run into quite a bit of an issue.
You know,
with extinction.
The thing is, as I used to be extremely angry about that and extremely protective over the medicine, to the point where, like, I actually was like blaming liberals for like using the medicine like too much. And, you know, I saw in a ceremony, ayahuasca showed me that she is actually sacrificing herself so we continue to heal. And so I'm not necessarily as afraid of that. Also, people are cultivating the medicine. In fact, that's something that I want to do. I want to cultivate my own ayahuasca and grow the vine myself. And I think if we continue to grow the vine, just as if, you know, we take a vine, we plant four more or something like that, I think that the medicine will last. They're obviously, I think the medicine is a little upset because the way that it's done in Peru is that there's two different chemicals to ayahuasca. There's the bicapi vine, which is the MAOA inhibitor. And then there's the chacruna leaves. They use chacruna. I know there's other forms of DMT that you can use, like mimosa hostilis, but they use the chacruna leaves. And there are farms down there that if, you know, it's the people who are growing the MAOI inhibitor, the bicapi vine, but they won't give you the bicapi vine unless you buy the chacruna leaves too. So that's putting like people who are growing the chacruna leaves alone out of business. And so, you know, there's a lot of greed to the medicine at this point. There's a lot of money that's being made in it because it's becoming such a popular thing. And that's what's really bad about it. You know, there are competing forces that are putting like the people who are actually doing it out of, you know, purity, out of business. So, but if we continue to grow the medicine and we continue to, you know, use it, then we should definitely cultivate it and keep it going.
So basically we have two different plants that have to be combined in this very specific way in order to create this experience.
Correct.
Now there's been
different explanations on the first people who began cultivating this from the very get-go, right? Or at least who came up with the...
Well, no, how it was come up with actually is how you become a shaman. This is the crazy part of shamanism, is that in order to become a shaman, you have to sit with plants. You have to diet these certain plants. So a diet, when I say diet, I do not mean like a diet that we understand here in the United States or in the Western culture. What I mean by diet is that you eat a very, very restricted meal of like fish and plantains, no salt. And you sit with a specific plant, you drink a specific plant, or you bathe in the bark of a specific plant. And the plant teaches you things. And the plant teaches you how to sing these sacred songs to help you clear the energy. So it's a very, very precise kind of, like you said, like it's doctor school. Like you have to, and there is no teacher aside from nature. So how this is the story of the first shaman. Actually, there is a tree called Niue Rau, and it's one of the shamanic trees. And the story goes that there was a Niue Rau tree next to the Amazon River thousands of years ago. And the fruits were falling into the river, and the fish were flying after eating these seeds. So the man who saw this was like, oh, I got to bathe in the Niue Rau bark. So he bathed in the Niue Rau bark, and the tree told him, you need to mix the bicapi vine with the chacruna leaves. And that's how ayahuasca came to be. It was actually the advice taken from a tree. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
This is a very strange world, you know?
Oh, and I understand that.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that it's very much a strange world, and that a lot of the things that we end up seeing and experiencing in our own very lives is kind of strange. I mean, we're, you know, meat sacks with a soul that are on a convertible rock that's shooting itself around a dying star, and we're the only living creatures that we've seen on a living planet for tens of thousands of light years away. So the very fact that right now we're able to communicate through cell phones that shoot up information into space and shoot it right back into our other hands right now through, you know, various forms of telecommunication, telephones, cable, and everything else, all of that is strange. For me, it's merely a matter of, you know, I can understand these things as stories. You know, okay, well, this is what happened, and this is what happened, and this is the general idea, and that is our history, right? It's a series of stories. The verisimilitude or legitimate validity of them scientifically is impossible to be able to gather, I think, in either case. So it doesn't necessarily matter as much as it is respecting the power of these plants right now. And, you know, when you're choosing to go down a road of taking these, you know, something like ayahuasca or synthetics, MDMA, things like that, it's just obviously incredibly important to recognize they have tremendous power, but that you should spend time with people who have used these things in the past to know the safest route to use them.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. I mean, that was, you know, on the MDMA, when I've discussed that, you know, I really urge people running and going straight into a club after taking random MDMA from a stranger is probably not your best move. Although it can be a lot of fun. You can die of things like dehydration quite quickly, or, you know, taking too much acid or taking something that's cut with something else, or, you know, I remember I was in Asheville, North Carolina, and there was some random guy who was like, dude, I got ayahuasca, bro. You want some? I was like, you know, I bet you don't. I bet you don't have.
Well, and this is the problem also with the medicine, is that a lot of people, and I will say there's a huge community here in California, the ayahuasca community. I'm going to be honest with you. And I don't, you know, I'm not dogmatic. I definitely, if anything, the medicine has taught me that I know nothing. I still have my eye through a peephole. But I will say that a lot of these people in California do think that they're shamans when they're not, and have let their ego get the best of them. And some of these people, I actually know a specific person, I won't name names, but this woman who thinks that she's a shaman is opening these plant diets for others. This is very dangerous. People can kill themselves. I mean, this is not a game. This is not a toy, and this should not be played with, because it is serious. And she's opening diets for people. And actually the case that just happened was that one of the men that she had opened a diet for here in California, had to go to Peru and screamed till 5 a.m. And my shaman had to help him and told this woman, you could have killed him because it is your mental state. You are dehydrating yourself because you aren't eating salt. I mean, the effects of not even eating salt in general is going to eventually make you hallucinate, you know? So you do see things and you do hear things and you do hear these voices. The shamans have figured this out, that if you do these certain restrictions, that you're going to start seeing a different world. But if you don't know what you're doing, you should not be doing it, which is why, you know, even after, if I'm going to be doing this for another year, if I don't feel ready and I feel like I might put somebody in danger, I will not hold ceremony for others because I want to make sure everybody is safe with me. So ego cannot get a hold of you, or you could kill somebody.
Yeah, no, this isn't anything to fuck around with. You know, massive dehydration aside, there is, you know, intensive vomit and things like that, electrolyte imbalances. So these are things to kind of understand when it comes to any of these particular drugs. Some are, you know, there's risk rewards to everything, although the two least safe drugs that we have that are out there are the two that are the most consumed in America, which is cigarettes and alcohol. Mm. So if you compare just the lethality of alcohol versus MDMA or acid, alcohol is way worse. And then cigarettes.
Oh, correct.
Everyone knows cigarettes kill people all the fucking time. And so it's a matter of kind of outweighing which ones are going to be more beneficial for you and kind of knowing your health state in general.
Correct. Well, I actually wrote an article about this, about the therapeutic properties of mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, after, you know, they took about 7 people and they did experiments where they gave these people psilocybin, severely depressed people, psilocybin, twice in a week. And 3 months later, 2 of those participants still didn't have any signs of depression. And it was that deep. Now, the problem is government regulations and how we do these experiments. The government does not want us to do these experiments, and they will put huge hurdles in front of you, and you have to pay a ton of money to do even a study with psychedelics. So it is very, very hard to gain an accurate understanding of these psychedelics, especially with the government in the way. So there hasn't been a lot of studies done on ayahuasca, but the studies that have been done is that ayahuasca can also heal diabetes. So that's, you know, there's other things that ayahuasca can do. You know, just the physical aspect of what these plant medicines can do. And so it's mental, it's physical, and it's spiritual. And so I would like to see the medicine, you know, psychedelics in general, all of them. I would like to see more studies done, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No,
more proof.
yeah. More evidence suggesting the verisimilitude of these particular drugs. But okay, cool. Well, I'd really like to thank you for being on the show.
Thanks.
It has been an awesome, kind of strange and existential and fun week.
It's been funny. I've definitely probably thrown you for a loop for the crazy shit that I've been saying.
Well, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Macy. My back is killing me from this futon, so I'm just about done.
Okay.
But we will continue on our adventures.
Okay. Sounds good.
Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.